What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettey along with Charlie Long in studio. At 5:45, we'll have our triple option feature. It'll be our Pick 5 segment, picking the games this coming weekend along with the national championship game. A little after 5:20, Jeff Duncan from NOLA.com does a great job covering the New Orleans Saints and also covering the basically the Louisiana scene in sports. Will join us to talk mainly Saints, and about what kind of direction that Jeff feels as though they'll go in with their coaching search. Charlie, I brought it up in hour number one that today was the final day for juniors to declare early for the NFL draft unless you're playing in a national championship game. And that date for Ohio State and Notre Dame players is January 24th. I look at it across the board, not nearly as many receivers or defensive backs, especially at corner, than we've seen in previous years. It's a good year at running back, and it's a pretty thick year at the running back position. What really jumps out at me, tight end, which is a good senior area, but it's even really enhanced by the number of top flight juniors that have declared early, along with offensive linemen. So, we've talked so much about Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, who technically could have come back for another season had he wanted to, but decided he was going to come out for the NFL draft. And we've all seen him. He's one of the best football players. And I'm talking about athlete football players that you be in this draft class, because this guy was a high school quarterback, has played running back, fullback, tight end, H-back, has played flanked out as a receiver on special teams, has been a deep snapper on punts and kicks. I mean, he's a big-time player, but a guy that I think a lot of people will pay a lot of close attention to would be Colston Loveland from Michigan. He didn't get the ball fed to him this year at Michigan, but he's a big, tall drink of water, excellent receiver, catches the ball well in flight, was a former basketball player, so you can see the positioning skills in him. He's also got some speed after the catch. Man, he can turn it up the field and get a lot of yardage. So Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren are the two first-round pick grade tight ends I have. Also in that group, certainly we saw him the 3 years at LSU, Mason Taylor, who I think Mason is going to end up being a second-round pick. Again, another tall, lanky receiver, catches the ball well, solid runner after the catch. He's improved as an inline blocker. You can see that part of his game he has really worked on, and I think Mason will end up going in round two. But then they have Miami of Florida tight end Elijah Arora. Man, Elijah, I got to talk to Coach O's two sons who are both on the Miami of Florida coaching staff. They both praise Elijah. How well he can catch the football. He's a great athlete. Maybe the best runner after the catch of the group of tight ends here. And for a big man, he's 6'4", and he's 245 pounds, but he runs like a deer. Okay, as a blocker, he sort of gets in the way, but he excels at catching the football downfield, most likely late second, early third. Harold Fannin from Bowling Green. You got to see him play a lot if you watch Thursday night games or if you watched him in the bowl game. Harold Fannin is always open, seemingly. He knows how to set you up, get positioned downfield, find a a little crease in the secondary, makes the catch, got really good hands, and he runs with the ball really well after the catch. I think he's got a shot, also like Mason Taylor, to be a second-round selection. Aronde Gadsden from Syracuse. I got a few years on me, so I actually scouted his dad. When he came out of college, he played for the Miami Dolphins. Aronde, again, a big, tall receiver, over 6'4", in that 245, 250 range. He's a good getting-away blocker. He's never going to be a guy that's going to level you at the point of attack, but he knows how to take you out of the play. He is a really good route runner, sure hands. Also another guy that knows how the NFL works. And you can see he's got a lot of training with his dad to understand what it takes to play at the NFL level. In a good group of tight ends senior-wise, man, the tight ends in this draft class, Charlie, it's not as good as 2 years ago, but it is really close.
So I'm looking really at this close. List, Mike. Dane Brugler has this on X if anyone's interested. The 70 underclassmen who declare for the 2025 draft before today's deadline. There's a lot, and I mean a lot, of top 100 picks on this list of names. And you talked about the tight ends, but also the running backs here, Mike. I mean, it's a great running back class, and all these guys like Ashton Ginty and Omarion Hampton from UNC and Caleb Johnson from Iowa, who you really like as well. Now, the Ohio State boys aren't on there just yet because they have to play the national championship game. But they will be there very, very soon. But also in the trenches, there's great players here like Texas's Kelvin Banks, and you mentioned, you know, obviously Will Campbell from LSU on the offensive side of the ball.
Tyler Booker. If you're talking about just a pure guard
for Alabama.
A pure guard. Now, he did play some tackle at Alabama. I thought he struggled with his footwork, and the speed guys got around him. I think that's more of a technical issue. They kicked him inside to guard. He is really good. And then certainly Will Campbell from LSU, who I think will be a top 12 pick in the draft. Emory Jones from LSU. The big question mark, and it's kind of a split decision, I would play Emory at right tackle because my thing is, Emory, show me that you can't play it. Yeah. If not, I can kick you to right guard, which I think is really maybe his best spot. Man, I'm a big believer in Josh Connolly from Oregon. Man, he's got the footwork, the long arms, the ability to kind of stymie you right at the point of attack and just kind of stun you with that hand punch. He does a really good job in controlling the man in front of him. And again, when you look across the board, you also see, I think maybe one of the most underrated players in this draft class, people aren't talking about, but Armin
Membu.
Membu,
yep,
from Missouri, who has played right tackle. A lot of people feel as though he'll play right guard. He's 6'3".
He's got it
in a little orthodox,
unorthodox kind of build for a tackle, Mike. But he is athletic as all get out.
He is a really good athlete, and he's strong at the point of attack. Does a nice job in pass protection. That's really where he excels as a pass protector. I think he'll end up being a first round pick.
I agree.
Also, too, Jonah Savalola from Arizona. Who's played right tackle?
He's going to be a guard, Mike, I think.
Man, again, same as Emory. I'll play him at right tackle. If it doesn't work out, I could kick him to a strong side guard. Man, he is a really good pass protector. You watch him, his footwork, his ability to kind of control the man in front of him. He steers him out of a lot of plays. So Jonah is a guy that I really like and think he also could be a first-round pick, and also Josh Simmons from Ohio State. We talked a little bit about him Monday night and his pass-blocking skills, and I think that's going to give him a shot at either left or right tackle.
Mike,
along with Cameron Williams is the guy that fought injuries. He needs some work technically. He's a really good athlete. I'd like to see him become a more physical player at the point of attack. He doesn't get his hands out quick enough. Again, those are things you can work on. Cameron Williams is not getting out of round two. He's going to be a second-round pick. But there is a little bit of work with Cameron. He did fight through some injuries this year. You look at that group of offensive linemen,
yeah,
they have really bolstered this group that would have been an average at best group. now. It's a strong point of the 2025 NFL draft.
No, it's like I was saying. I'm seeing a lot of first, maybe second round picks, both at, as you mentioned, tight end, but also the offensive line, defensive line as well, Mike. I mean, we've raved about Mason Graham before, Kenneth Grant, also the other defensive tackle from Michigan, and then one of your favorites from this entire class, Abdul Carter from Penn State on the defensive line.
Good look.
You know what? The craziest thing about Abdul Carter, he was an off-ball linebacker. This was his first year playing edge. So he's still got room to grow, but he is such a physical freak, what he was able to accomplish at Penn State this past year. And Penn State, I mean, like,
did they use Micah Parsons correct?
I don't want to say that he's the Micah Parsons 2.0, but you can kind of see the comparison there.
Okay, Micah was not Micah at Penn State.
No.
Okay, Abdul Carter was Abdul Carter at Penn State.
Yeah.
You know, you saw it, and it was like, whoa, man, those guys, and he's playing with a bum shoulder. That's the other thing. A lot of people, oh, well, I see he gets taken out some games. Yeah, because he's hurting. But when he's in the game, he was a difference maker out there. And certainly the two kind of edge guys, however you want to use them, at either defensive end or stand-up outside linebacker from the University of Georgia. And don't be surprised,
Jalen Walker.
Both those guys get picked in the top 15.
Ooh. Yeah, Jalen Walker, I could see. Mikael Williams. I mean, someone's going to take.
Williams is going to get picked in the middle of the draft.
Yeah, yeah, I could see it.
And man, Derek Harmon too. I want to talk about Derek one day. We'll get to talk about it. But Derek's a guy I scouted at Michigan State. Then he transferred to Oregon. He's a 6'4" plus guy, 320 pounds. Man, he runs like a 230-pound linebacker.
We'll do more of an eval and deep dive on the position groups as we get closer to the draft, Mike. But Jalen Walker, man, he is fun to follow. Like, Kirby had him playing a lot of off-ball. But don't you think, like, when he gets to the NFL level, just let him rush the passer?
Is he the guy getting a snap? Go take him down.
Yes, exactly. Just, oh, man. There's some athletes on the offensive and defensive lines in this class. I can't wait to break it all down.
And the other part, too, Charlie, is when he's going to go to the combine, Deonte Walker from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Man, first of all, I want to see what he weighs in at, because I've been told by some coaches at Kentucky, he's been on the plus side of 365 pounds.
Whew.
Now, he can run. What's so unusual is to watch his athletic skills. And you talk about a guy that can stuff the inside run, it's him. But Kenneth Grant is another big man.
Yep.
Man, I think the world of. I think he'll end up going in the top 20 in round one. We come back, we'll have on with us Jeff Duncan, covers the Saints for NOLA.com, also covers certainly the sports scene here in Louisiana, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Detella along with Charlie Long. Joined by Steve Geller. We'll get in touch with Jeff Duncan a little later. And it's time for our pick six, but it's actually pick five. So, Charlie, throw it to you.
All right, guys. We'll recap what happened. The last time we did the pick six segment, we did not know what was going to happen with our records because the Notre Dame and Ohio State games had not been played yet. However, everything went pretty well for us. Ohio State won. We all had Ohio State. Notre Dame won. The three of us had Notre Dame. Bobby had Penn State. So we're looking now to what happened last weekend. And boys, it was not a very good weekend for me in the wild card round. Here I was thinking that we would have some close games, and we had a lot of blowouts. So unfortunately, I had a 2-4 week. Mike, you went 4-2. Bobby went 3-3. Steve, you went 4-2 as well. So resetting the records, I'm still sitting on top at 65-55. Mike, you're at 60-60. Overall, Bobby's at 54-66, and Steve, you're at 57-60.
Come on, Geller, you can't let him beat you out of this.
Man, it's going to be tight.
You got to get the bronze medal here, Steve.
I mean, we have how many games left? We have 5 games this week, and then we have the 2 NFL championship games, and we got the Super Bowl. So, Steve, just pick a couple games similar to Bobby, and you'll be able to beat him out here.
Yeah, right.
So, we got the NFL divisional round that we'll be picking this week, guys. We're going to go in chronological order, as always. The first game of the weekend, the 4-seeded Texans out of the AFC at the 1-seeded Chiefs. Kansas City, 8-point favorites.
I'm going to go Kansas City here. I think they were going to overmatch the Texans. Houston did surprise me in the opening wild card round, but I'm never going to bet against Patty Mahomes, and I'll give the 8 points.
Amen. I'm the same. Chiefs.
Well, this is a clean sweep, gentlemen. So hopefully, you know, the Texans
that means
can
we're
going to
have a tight
stuff.
One.
Yeah, right.
That means the Texans will keep it close.
The same thing happened last week. We all picked the Chargers to take down the Texans, and I feel like, guys, this is maybe a little bit similar to what we saw last year, where the Texans beat the Browns in the first round, that wild card matchup at home, and then they went on to play the Ravens, and they just kind of got stomped. They were overmatched here. I do hope the Texans can keep it close, but I'm not going to put my risk on that. Give me the Chiefs minus 8 points. Up next, guys, the Saturday night game. We got the six-seeded Commanders at the top-seeded Lions in the NFC. Detroit 9.5-point favorites in this matchup.
Yeah, that one is a bit too steep for me. I'll roll with Jaden Daniels and the Commanders this one on the road, getting that 9.5. I just think I don't know if they'll win the game, but I do expect Washington to at least keep it close.
Bobby's got the Lions, and I think I agree with them, unfortunately. Listen, guys, like the Commanders, everything else from here on out is gravy for them. I've said that a couple times here.
Sure.
I think Detroit, this is bigger for them, and they're at home in front of their home fans. 9.5 points is a lot, but I think that they hit the Commanders early on, and then that fourth quarter becomes a little bit less important. Give me the Lions minus 9.5 over the Commies.
I'm going to go with the Lions. I just think they're a better team. Jaden's going to give you trouble, and man, I love Jaden to death, but in this case, I really like the Lions, so they're a better team, and I think the Lions will cover.
Up next, we got the Sunday game, starting with the NFC matchup, the 4-seeded Rams at the 2-seeded Eagles. Philadelphia 6.5-point favorites. Bobby has the Eagles.
The Rams are like my dark horse in this NFL playoffs, guys. I'm going to roll with them getting the 6.5. I don't like the way Philly played at all last game. Yeah, they won in Green Bay, but it definitely wasn't pretty for me. I think Philly can still win this game. I'm not really going to pick them to lose this matchup, but I still think the Rams will keep this one close. So I'm going to roll with Sean McVay in that offense against this tough Phillies D.
It's funny, guys. If this was 7.5, I'd probably take the Rams, but I will go with Philly. I think that the weather conditions for this game are going to be a nightmare. I think Philly's going to be able to run the ball. Granted, you know, if the Rams can run the football against that front for Philadelphia, good luck to them. I mean, I think they could do it. But give me the Eagles to win by a touchdown this game. 6.5, I will ride with Philadelphia at home.
Short week, travel, cold weather, going with the Eagles.
Yeah, a lot of the factors in play there. Moving on, guys, we got our final game of the NFL divisional round. The 3-seeded Ravens, 1-point favorites in Buffalo against the 2-seeded Bills. Bobby's got the Ravens.
Yeah, this is basically a coin flip, really a pick 'em here. Tough to gauge this matchup. Two teams that, you know, are so – I think it's going to be a tight matchup. Obviously, the spread there is telling you that. And I'm going to roll with the Ravens on the road in Buffalo as well.
The Ravens, I think, are a better team, and they're playing better football. Now, the Bills definitely surprised me with that first-round matchup, and they just dominated – a Bronco team that I thought was going to keep it close. They kept it close for the first quarter, and that was about it. I love Josh Allen. He's my favorite quarterback to watch play. And one of these two quarterbacks I will be rooting for to take down the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. However, if you're asking me right now who I'm rolling with, give me Baltimore on the road, minus 1 point.
I'm going to go with Buffalo. I think, you know, you look at this game, without Zay Flowers, And how well that offense will be able to move the ball via the air. It looks as though that'll be a weather game also. Both teams are used to it. Man, Josh Allen, the way he's playing, they got a running game now like they've never had over the last 4 or 5 years. I'm going with Buffalo.
And I agree with Bobby, guys. I think y'all maybe feel the same way, that the winner of this game should be the Super Bowl favorite. I mean, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be primetime matchup.
Probably the last 2 years has picked against Kansas City and Mahomes. I told him, how much money you want off of that? Zero.
That's true. But I just feel like the way both these teams are playing right now, I would love to see them take down the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. But, Mike, you stand alone with the Bills. We'll see how it works out for you. Finally, wrapping things up, guys. As I said, we go chronological order. On Monday, January 20th, the College Football Playoff National Championship game in Atlanta, Ohio State 8-point favorites against the 7-seeded Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Yeah, Bobby has got Ohio State.
I'm going to roll with the Buckeyes as well, given that 8 points. It's a bit steep, but I think they've got the offense to cover it against the Irish, even though I think Notre Dame's got a decent defense here, obviously. But give me the Ohio State laying the 8.
Can you tell that I have, I've been kind of learned my lesson from last week? I'm taking all the favorites here. Ohio State, Texas kind of felt like the national championship game. I would love to see Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame keep this close. I'm rooting for Notre Dame in this game. But for my pick'ems, give me the Buckeyes. They're the best team in college football. They bring it home this year.
I thought the toughest game was going to be against Texas, and it turned out to be.
Right.
That was a really tough game. I'm going with Ohio State. I don't know that Notre Dame has enough oomph on the offensive side to football. If this game becomes touchdown, touchdown, that sort of matching. So that's why, you know what, I think Notre Dame can keep it close early, but I'm going with Ohio State. And this line initially almost opened at 10. When we went Monday night to the casino show, it was 9.5, and it's now, what, all the way down to 8? That means they got a lot of people that believe in Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. But I got to go with Ohio State. I think they're the better team, more explosive. They can put points on the board. And, man, what are some of the Ohio State fans are going to say? That they wanted to run Ryan Day out after losing to Michigan. Now you got a national championship. But they're going to bitch about losing to Michigan.
Oh, no, for sure. And Michigan fans will hold that over their head, even with the national championship game. But, guys, I mean, I look back to what Brad Evans was saying yesterday about it, that he thinks that Notre Dame can keep it close and that we'll get a competitive national championship game. Trust me, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But the weapons, to
your
point.
You said that last week, too.
To your point, Mike, the weapons that Ohio State has on offense with Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Ibuka and those running back duo with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, it just feels like, yes, you know, Notre Dame's defense will put up a valiant effort. They've been excellent all season long, especially in the postseason run. But, man, Ohio State's got some horses, so to speak, that can keep up with them.
The one thing is, can Notre Dame slow down the freshman wide receiver?
Jeremiah Smith.
But the same way Texas did. Texas did a nice job, I thought, of bracketing him and also double covering him. But what it did, it left Emeka Ibuka open one-on-one. Man, he beat that. Okay, so that's going to be, I don't know if Notre Dame, they had Benjamin Morrison's a different story, but he's not playing in this game because of an injury. I don't know if Notre Dame can match up better than Texas did in the secondary up against the receiving core that Ohio State has.
Notre Dame's path to victory here, I think, is pretty clear.
They got to get help from Ohio State.
They got to get some turnovers, and they have to control the clock. And now they've got a good running game. Ohio State's defense is very underrated. Like, everyone talks about all the weapons that they have on
offense.
All them
cats are going to be playing in the NFL next year.
Exactly. And it's a very veteran-laden defense. It just feels like this is Ohio State's game to lose. And eight, you know, may seem like a little bit heavy, but as you mentioned, Mike, it's down from basically 10.
It was 9.5, and somebody told me as I walked past, it was 10 this morning. Now it's down to 9.5. It goes all the way down to 8. So, man,
we're getting a discount price.
I'll get that discount. I'll take that.
Sold.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTello along with Charlie Long in studio. We had Jeff, and he just dropped, so we'll get him right back on the line. But, you know, Charlie and I were talking about the national championship game and just how much it means to Ryan Day. He came into this season, a lot of people had picked Ohio State to win the national championship. Will Howard told me at Manning Passing Academy, he was like, Mr. Mike, it is one thing. It is national championship or bust. Well,
yes,
now he's got a chance to erase that bust part and become the national champs for Ohio State. On our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, covers the New Orleans Saints and the sports scene in New Orleans. Jeff Duncan from NOLA.com. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Mike, thanks for having me on. Good to join you guys tonight.
Jeff, Monday's press conference, no surprise there. A lot of people putting out this about Mickey maybe retiring and everything else. And I talked to a few people that, Mike, that's not going to happen. Mickey Loomis is staying here with his football team. But I think the one thing that I think has to be said is that the team is in this situation. You can look at the salary cap as one thing, but my deal is it's all personnel decisions. You've not drafted very well in the draft since 2017. You've got a couple of free agent pickups that have worked, but you're not better inside along the defensive tackle position as you were a couple years back. You got aging players on the defensive side, the football. You still got work to be done along the offensive line. You still could use a stud receiver at wide receiver and also at tight end, and so much uncertainty at quarterback. This has come down to one thing for me. Personnel. You don't have enough of core good young players on this roster that are 27 years of age and younger.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Mike, because if you're going to have this kind of older roster, you know, with veteran players that you're paying a lot of money to, you know, veteran guys like Derek Carr, Taysom Hill, Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, then you're going to be top-heavy in salary with those guys. You've got to have some young talent on the roster through the draft that's going to be on rookie contracts that kind of balances out the checkbook, if you will. What we've seen, a good example of that, and I've said this a lot recently, is what Tampa has done post-Tom Brady.
Yes.
I think they've managed the post-Tom Brady transition much better than the Saints have managed the post-Drew Brees transition. I mean, you look at their roster, Mike, they're very similar. They've got a lot of veteran guys, Levante David, Godwin, Evans, Vita Vea, Baker Mayfield, but then they've got a lot of good young talent. I mean, Bucky Irving, Zion McCollum, Yaya Diaby. I mean, there's guys there. If you're a Bucks fan, you feel pretty good. You've won four NFC South division titles in a row, and you've got some young players to build around, and the Saints have not had that same success, so I agree with you 100%.
The other thing, too, with Tampa, every draft choice that they've selected over the last 3 years has made the team but one. Think of that. Man, you don't think Jason Light's doing a hell of a job, along with the staff around him, to pick players and younger guys that you're building your core around. And I think that certainly has been a big key for the Falcons. Jeff, once the coaching thing got to be obvious, just in the back of my mind, I always thought Aaron Glenn is the number one guy. If he wants this job, I think it's his. And I still believe that. If he wants it, it's his. Now, him having played for the Jets and known the organization, and that might not be a positive, knowing what's going on with the Jets and Woody Johnson, I've always sort of put him as the number one guy. Mike McCarthy getting cut loose, though. I think that was maybe something not many people thought would happen. They always thought maybe Jerry would do maybe a short-term deal with Mike and he would return for another season. I think Mike McCarthy and his agent took a look at this once Rabel went to New England and said, hey, we in the catbird seat here, and let's get out of this mess, and let's go somewhere else where we can have much more control, because you got none in Dallas because of Jerry. And you got a situation now where Mike McCarthy is going to become a major player in the Saints sweepstakes.
Yeah, and I think he interviewed with the Bears this week. I know they're very high on him as well. You know, his reputation for developing quarterbacks in this league is, he's well-regarded in that area. Mike, I've always said this about Mike McCarthy, and I'm a little biased because, I knew Mike when he was here. He's much higher regarded in NFL circles and coaching circles than, say, the perception of fans. I mean, you talk to NFL people, they think highly. I know Sean Payton. I know Mickey Loomis think highly of Mike McCarthy. So I would think he would have a definite shot at this job. But I tend to agree with you. I think Aaron Glenn is going to be hard to beat for that job, just because I think he's ready. He's a little older than people think. You know, he's in his 50s. I mean, people think he's this young pup, but he's earned his stripes. And the other thing I like about him is, and I've learned this from covering Sean Payton, I've really, learned to respect the Bill Parcells coaching tree, and that's Aaron Glenn. He played for Parcells, coached under his tree, coached under Sean, and then to Dan Campbell, who was a Parcells guy. And that formula, Mike, that those guys have under, that you learned under Bill Parcells, the tuna, it works. I don't care how modern the league gets, that tried and true formula works for winning, and I think that's a big feather in his cap.
Jeff, in doing shows across the country, you find out, because I think, you know, when doing sports talk and we get texts and everything, a lot of times you become like a horse. You got blinders on. You don't see the outside world. And you can't believe some of the lousy jobs that are open today. Okay, you think about the Jets and the ownership there. What's happened with the Raiders now? They got a caveat now because Tom Brady has got involved. The Bears has been a mess all across the board. But it's always, oh, the Saints are the worst job out there. Listen, I'm not going to agree with that one bit. When you look at Jacksonville and the Jets and the Raiders – and the Bears, now, a couple of those teams have young quarterbacks that I think that's a big advantage to have that in your back pocket. But also you got meddlesome owners. You've got a track record of revolving general managers, people in the personnel department here and there. I think sometimes we don't recognize that unless you're involved with it. And I get to be in that stage that you do shows in New York or Jacksonville or Las Vegas or in Chicago where they're like, man, you talk about a mess. We got it here. It's just not in New Orleans.
Yeah, no. I think Gail Benson as owner is widely viewed as one of the best owners to work for in the league. I think that the history of stability and the culture of continuity here in New Orleans is going to be very attractive to coaches. You know that, Mike. I mean, yeah. Coaches don't want to go somewhere where they're going to get cut loose in 2 years if they don't win. The loyalty factor in New Orleans, I think, is very strong. Sometimes people would say maybe too strong, but it's going to help attract quality candidates because you don't have that tempestuous, volatile owner that's just going to flip things over like we've seen in Carolina after a year or two. You know, it's not a good look. And so I think in some ways, I would say this, look at Minnesota, how, you know, they hit on their head coach in O'Connell and they walked away from Kirk Cousins and had a plan, drafted McCarthy. They brought in a bridge quarterback in Darnold. Look how good a season they had with the right plan. If you get the right coach and Sean Payton showed us all here, look how bad that situation was that he came in 2005 and six. You know, if you can win in that, you can win here. There's some salary cap and roster issues you got to clean up. But if you get the right head coach, you can flip this thing around pretty quickly.
Jeff, Clint Kubiak having a second, this time in-person interview with the Seattle Seahawks. I know the Cleveland Browns were also interested in him before they promoted in-house Tommy Rees. We had some people texting in and asking us about this kind of interview process with Kubiak and why, you know, he would leave the Saints OC job for kind of a lateral move, another vacant OC position in the NFL. And, you know, just listening to Mickey Loomis talk earlier this week at his end of season press conference that with a new coaching staff coming in, they'll have free reign to kind of build, or a new head coach, they'll have free reign to kind of build their coaching staff with whoever they want to have. So, you know, Kubiak really isn't guaranteed a spot in New Orleans, and that's kind of why he's looking elsewhere, and it feels like the Seahawks are going to go get him pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that second interview is really key for him. And, yeah, it's the bird in the hand. You know, you take what you can get. I mean, he doesn't know if he's going to be a part of this process going forward because we don't know what the next head coach is going to want to do offensively. I mean, if they bring in, say, Joe Brady, I mean, he's going to run his offensive system, not the Kubiak system. And I think it speaks highly of Kubiak that a coach as well regarded as Mike McDonald wants to talk to him a second time. I mean, that's a really good job out there. I think Mike McDonald did a really good job his first year. John Schneider, the GM, highly regarded in NFL circles. They had a very good, what I would consider a transition year in Seattle with a first-year head coach. So that's a good fit if Clint Kubiak can land there. And look, he did a good job this year under some extraordinary circumstances, juggling a lineup that was missing all kinds of key players with not very good depth. So I think in league circles, he's going to be, I think, regarded highly for his work this year, even though the numbers didn't add up. I mean, actually, you know, they ended up scoring fewer points and gaining less yards this year than they did the year before, you know, after they got rid of Pete Carmichael. But, I mean, that was probably a little had to do with the handicap he was dealing with.
Jeff, last question for you, because you've done this, and, you know, for me it's pushing 40 years. But one of the things I see difference ownership-wise is we've got a new group of owners in the National Football League. Then say even 20 years ago or 10 years ago, you see the change. A lot of these owners today have made their money in a quicker manner than the owners of yesteryear. And so they have a quicker fuse. No patience. Can't spell it and don't have it. They don't want nothing to talk about with anybody about patience. I want to win now. You know why? I became a billionaire because I made my money quickly. And I think we're in that change of pro sports, not only in the NFL, but across the board, if it's Major League Baseball, NBA, everything else. They look at money a different way than, say, guys of 20, 25 years ago. And they made it quicker. They got a lot more of it. And you know what? If you don't win, I'm going to find somebody that will do it for me. Because you know why? I did that in another business.
Yeah, look, I think that's just kind of true, Mike, of all society, right? Yeah. I mean, I know my guy Rick Pitino called it microwave society, right? I mean, you can cook something in the oven. It's going to take a lot longer. And you can whip it in the microwave in 2 or 3 minutes and get your meal. That's kind of where we're at, and I don't think it's just football coaches. I think it's kind of like that everywhere. You know, you got some fancy ab rollers going to give you good six pack abs instead of having to do the old 50 sit-ups. Everything's trying to get things done quicker, and I agree with you. There's less patience. I think there's so much money involved in the NFL now. And look, I don't want to quote Mickey Loomis on comparing Dennis Allen to Chuck Knoll, but he did have a point in that, like, when Chuck Knoll started with the Steelers back in the late 60s and early 70s, I mean, he was 1-13, 5-9, you know, 6-8. He was given a long leash before he turned that thing around. I don't know if you'd get by with that today, with the way these owners are today.
No, the other thing, too, is they didn't have free agency back then. And I think owners see, man, how did the Commanders change that around in 1 year? How did the Texans do that in a year? They say, wait a minute, we got the personnel. You telling me that. So you the problem, not me. And I think it's a much quicker fix because of free agency than, say, in the days of Chuck or, say, Bill Walsh. Those guys or Tom Landry, when they came into the league, they didn't have that. It was basically draft. That's how you're going to do it. So, man, it's hard to compare yesteryears, to be honest.
No, I know. Well, it helps this year to have a Jaden Daniels to turn that thing around.
Yeah,
right, Mike?
I wish. Jeff, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, anytime, guys. You have a great week.
All righty. Jeff Duncan does a great job covering the Saints, NOLA.com. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number two right after this break. Finishing up here in our number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Jeff Duncan for joining us. Great insights on the Saints. 625, the voice of the Pelicans, Todd Graffinini, will join Sports Talk. And at 725, Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, also our WWL digital content producer, being here to talk about all the moves with the Saints and coaches. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.